Hey, Trey here. Two things. First, I'm not sure if you know it, but Us and Them was honored with four Associated Press Broadcasters Awards, including one for excellence in public service through journalism. Second, it's the time for the Spring Pledge Drive at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And if you value the work that our Us and Them team does in telling the stories about the things that divide Americans, would you consider making a pledge of support to West Virginia Public Broadcasting? You can call or text to 1-800-RADIO-87, or you can go online to WV Public and find the little red button at the upper right-hand corner. And when you pledge, let them know where you live and that you're a listener of Us and Them. Doing this would be a big help for our show and the other great programming at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And thank you so much. Hey, it's Trey, and there's somebody I'd like you to meet.
My name is Amy Staten. I am a medical assistant at Lampson Health and Wellness Center. You know, whenever I was younger, I always thought I'll never live here. I want to move off. I want what's best for me and the kids. Like, I never thought I would live here. But now seeing the world and how it is today, I don't want to live anywhere else.
Amy Staten lives in Williamson, West Virginia, population 3,000. It's in the southwest corner of the state, where the horizon is almost always made of mountains.
I have lived here my whole life. It's a really small community, real quiet.
If you go downtown, there aren't a ton of businesses or tourism, but she, her husband Jacob, and three kids, they feel safe in Williamson.
Kids can get into a lot more trouble away from here. There's more opportunities for my kids to possibly get their hands on things that they may not get here. And now I know kids are kids and they're going to get in trouble, and I'm not going to say my kids are going to be perfect, but I feel like I could watch them closer here.
There's this other feeling she gets from living here, that she's from somewhere. She knows Williamson, and Williamson knows her.
I love that, you know, no matter where you go, you're going to see somebody that you know. Whether you are going to Walmart or you're going to your local grocery store, you're going to run into somebody and you're going to have a 15, 20-minute conversation about your kids or your grandparents or just work in general. Like, you're going to run into somebody, and everybody knows everybody.
Tell me, what will a coal miner do?
The town was built along the Norfolk Southern Railway, and it made its money off of coal. And so, like so many towns in Appalachia, it's lost population over the past few decades.
I've had people who have moved away because of jobs or family members that were sick down there that they would have to go take care of, and they absolutely love it in other places. And they're like, you know, it's just so much better. We have so many more opportunities for the kids. They're, you know, the sports down here is better.
They can make a dollar at all. Here's every place to fall. Place it all on that coal loading machine.
Fewer jobs, less money. That's come with a decline in births. And in the community, fewer obstetric options.
My first pregnancy was the single pregnancy. And this was back in 2013. Back then, we had two hospitals in this area. I did weigh out my options. I was like, I can go 5 minutes down the street and feel safe and secure and know things are going to be okay. I actually did do that. I just felt more secure knowing that if I was in an emergency, I had a hospital there that had an OB that could help me get there.
That first kid is 9 years old now. In 2016, Staten was pregnant again, this time with twins. That made her health care a lot more complicated before and after birth.
With twins, you are considered a high risk. You get more ultrasounds. You get more doctor's appointments. They want to see you back more. They do more blood work and test.
There's also a greater chance of emergencies, like problems with the placenta or miscarriages. Twins also tend to be born premature. In all of these scenarios, minutes matter. In the handful of years between her first and second pregnancies, Amy Staton's access to obstetric care changed. First, Williamson Memorial Hospital, 5 minutes away from her house, stopped offering OB services.
And then ARH had the OB, but they didn't have a NICU.
ARH stands for Appalachian Regional Healthcare. The system has a hospital just over the Tug Fork River in Kentucky. In 2016, Staton could have had her twins there. But if something went wrong and they needed intensive care, the newborns would need to be flown to another hospital. The only hospital in the area with a neonatal ICU was in Pikeville, Kentucky, and that's around 40 minutes away from Staton's home.
I did say, well, if something happens and my babies are premature and they do need the help, I don't have to worry about them flying them somewhere. They can keep them there, and I could stay with them while going back and forth from home to my other kid at home.
From West Virginia Public Broadcasting and PRX, this is Us and Them, the show that tells the stories about the things that divide us. I'm Trey Kay.
Breaking news is where we begin tonight at 11. Williamson Memorial Hospital will, in fact, close its doors in the coming weeks.
I've had family members who have had babies at Williamson Memorial Hospital. I've had family members who have had C-sections at Williamson Memorial Hospital. Even as far as 16 years ago, 15 years ago, well, we had that resource here.
The hospital is currently in bankruptcy and had several potential buyers.
However, when the COVID-19 crisis picked up, those potential buyers had to shift focus away from the purchase to deal with the pandemic.
COVID really created a kind of domino effect to rural hospitals. Beds not available, patients were being transferred all over to different parts of the state or even different states for treatment, and just access was a big issue.
That's Dr. Dino Beckett. He's an osteopathic physician and CEO of Williamson Health and Wellness Center.
Because what happened was there was this demand for nurses, respiratory therapists, all these medical professionals, as well as physicians all over. And then what happened is in bigger population centers, they had this shortage of staffing. So they started, you know, looking at travel nurses. So they offered these opportunities for people. So a lot of the rural nurses were looking at these opportunities that were making a lot of money to go sign a contract to work for a travel agency. So they go for that because, I mean, financially, it's a good decision for them, and they're gone for a period of time and then come back. But it leaves a void here, created a vacuum to where we started losing care here. And that's still not settled out yet.
We're sitting in Beckett's clinic in downtown Williamson, West Virginia, which he opened a little over a decade ago. It's one of the only places in the area where people can get basic health care.
Growing up, there were, you know, all types of physicians in the downtown area. You know, the population has gradually declined, but during the years, we've seen that also play out with physicians.
A shortage of doctors is not a new issue in rural communities. In the 1990s and early 2000s, many West Virginia towns struggled to attract American doctors. The problem became so bad, the U.S. Agriculture Department sponsored visas for thousands of doctors from other countries to come and work here in small-town America.
We had a lot of docs from India, Pakistan, and the Philippines, particularly, you know, in our area. We have lots of doctors that were Filipinos that had gone to med school and came to our area. There was an abundance of primary care, but then we also had a lot of specialty care here as well. And over the years, that's kind of dwindled down to where now you have your centers of treatment. So you're referring a lot out as opposed to what we were able to use to take care of at home before.
And for struggling rural hospitals, obstetric and prenatal services tend to be some of the first on the chopping block. That's exactly what happened to Williamson's hospital back in 2014.
Yeah, well, I mean, none of us were happy. I mean, none of the staff was happy. Obviously, the community, you know, two of my children were born at that hospital. So it was, you know, something that we didn't want to do, but, you know, we weren't the ones calling the shots. And, I mean, when you look at it financially, it was just one of the things that they couldn't provide other services if they continued to do those. And then it would put us at further risk of closure.
In the following years, 89 rural hospitals across the country closed their obstetric units. And when medical options shrink, families have to make hard decisions about how and where to get care.
Going back to challenges, whether it's, you know, socioeconomic challenges for people that, you know, I mean, maybe they would have to relocate to an area because they can't get access, or it's, instead of them having to drive so far to get that access, they want to move somewhere to where that's closer to the care that they would need. That's definitely a consideration or challenge that they may be experiencing.
Dr. Dino Beckett happens to be Amy Staten's boss. She's a medical assistant at his office.
I do people's blood pressure. I go over their medication list, give them shots if they need it. You build a bond with these patients and you get to know them and they're like family. It's a good job to have.
And speaking of family, hers is growing again.
I am with my second set of twins. You know, we do have some women come in sometimes and they'll want to take a pregnancy test and they'll want to come in and make sure that, you know, their blood work is right and that they are pregnant and how far along they are. And, you know, they'll say, who are you going to? And I'll tell them. And they'll say, well, do you think that's a good option? And I will give them my opinion.
Staten has definitely done her research. This time, all of her options for both prenatal and OB care are at least 30 miles away.
And that scares me a little bit. Every doctor's appointment I have to go to, I have to take off work or I have to miss time. And then it's a 30 to 45 minute drive to my doctor's appointment. You know, it does go through your mind. How am I going to get here if I'm in preterm labor? Like, these babies are going to come fast. What happens if I don't make it? They probably don't have the equipment to, if I do have to have an emergency surgery, they're not going to have the equipment to send them out somewhere. Put them on a vent if they need help breathing, or help me if I need it, or if I need an emergency C-section, they'll have to fly me out.
Right now, she's in her second trimester. And if something were to happen to her twins or her, the only option might be an emergency medical flight.
They would have to send it to Charleston, Huntington, Lexington, or wherever. That way they could get the proper vents and the proper medication. And if the mom's placenta was to rupture or, you know, it wasn't getting enough nutrition, then they would have to fly the baby or the mom out for an emergency C-section.
Staten and her husband Jacob are far from the only parents in this position. Over the last decade, nearly half of all rural counties have become what's considered maternity care deserts. The decline of rural obstetrics practices has big stakes for the future of communities like Williamson.
It takes away from jobs in our area. You know, it takes away from seeing that these kids grow up and be happy. And I used to live across the street from the guy who used to deliver babies at Williamson Memorial Hospital. So he would say, I delivered that little boy. Years ago, I delivered you. Years ago, I delivered you. And I don't think that we'll get that here because, you know, I can remember saying, Lord, that man delivered me when I was a baby. So I know when you see, you could put the face to who delivered you, and you know, you could hear your stories of your parents telling you. It's pretty cool.
As we imagined what this story might sound like, my mind drifted to two big questions. What, if anything, can Amy Staten's story tell us about Williamson's future? And if we know this is a big problem, is anyone trying to do something about it? That's coming up after a break. You're listening to Us and Them. This program is supported in part by the West Virginia Humanities Council and the CRC Foundation.
Music lifts us up and brings us together, even when we can't get together in person. Mountain Stage brings you live performances on the air, online, and in our podcast. They remind you how it feels to be in a live audience listening to live music. This is Larry Gross, host of Mountain Stage. Find a link to our stations and our podcast online at mountainstage.org.
Hey, It's Trey Kay, and you're listening to Us and Them from PRX and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Today, we're talking about an American divide that threatens how we see and talk about rural life. Who can and can't easily start a family in this country? Carrie Cochran McLean has focused on rural health care for 20 years. She's the policy chief for the National Rural Health Association. And these days, her work puts a spotlight on the medical reality for places like Williamson, West Virginia.
One of the things about rural health is that it is a microcosm for what we see in our larger healthcare delivery system.
It's not like rural America was once overflowing with high-tech labor and delivery units. Cochran McLean says diminishing access to rural healthcare fractures something essential to small communities.
We are seeing a growing closure of rural hospitals entirely, but then also rural hospitals that choose to provide maternity care services. And so what has historically been a known challenge is becoming more and more difficult in many of our communities. And as the hospital or the healthcare facility is frequently the hub of healthcare in a community in terms of employment, in terms of economic growth, and also development within a community, and then obviously in terms of getting access to care, it's really concerning to see these closure rates at the level that they are.
Cochran McLean grew up in Montana, another mostly rural state. She says that just like West Virginia, her home state is also closing more and more OB hospitals. It's a trend that's echoing all across the country.
In terms of rural hospital closures, we have data that's been tracking from 2010 is the data that we look at most consistently. And we are up to 147 rural hospitals that have closed since 2010. When we talk about obstetric care in the time period between 2004 and 2014, just under 10% of rural counties experienced loss of their hospital obstetric services. Everyone is impacted when the service closes in a rural community. I think the challenge really then becomes for families and individuals who don't have the means, and I use that word broadly, to access care elsewhere. It's been a slow but steady drumbeat over time. There's not just one issue that has caused loss of access to these services, but we do know that women, and especially women in communities of color, have more challenges in accessing services and have worse health outcomes when they're having to travel for care due to a number of issues.
One issue at play here is the sheer cost of American pregnancy care. The University of Minnesota's Rural Health Research Center looked at this in a study last year and found that around 40% of rural hospitals are losing money by offering obstetrics care. On the average, it costs around $18,000 to have a baby.
In order to provide labor and delivery services, you need to have a trained cohort of providers that are able to do surgery in case of need of a C-section. You need to have those folks on call in the facility 24 hours, 7 days a week. So there is a significant workforce component of it and cost associated with that.
And Cochran McLean says then you've got the price of equipment and actually maintaining delivery rooms.
And when we're talking about rural healthcare at large, not just OB care, but in the case of OB care, you have those same fixed costs, but a much smaller patient population to spread those costs over. And so just, you know, kind of by pure math, the cost per service is going to be higher in our rural communities.
And if that wasn't enough of a problem to solve, rural areas also tend to be poorer. which makes an important difference in how hospitals are reimbursed for patient care.
For many, many of our rural areas, the majority of pregnant persons that they are caring for are on Medicaid. Medicaid, being a public payer, has the lowest reimbursement rates for maternity care. So you're coupling kind of these high fixed costs with the cost of medical malpractice insurance and low reimbursement. And in, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's hard to make the math work. Honestly, at this point, I'm talking about sustaining what we've got. And a big part of that is, again, kind of going back to my earlier comments around viability of our facilities to keep their doors open and keep these services going, and then making sure we've got a workforce there to care for these individuals. Those, to me, are the two bottom lines when we're talking about helping maintain access. What we're looking to do in our rural communities is have the full range of prenatal through postpartum care, and then the ability for low-risk pregnancies to occur.
American healthcare is a huge, complicated business. There's no one way to address the decrease in rural healthcare options. Cochran McLean says that much of their advocacy work happens at the federal level, which presents another challenge. A lot of our rural healthcare costs are paid by Medicaid, and every state has a unique system.
Medicaid is a significant, usually at least majority, payer for rural deliveries. However, you know, there are a couple of different places, and especially in some of our more conservative states and our states, especially again in the Southeast, we see kind of a lower coverage of services or lower eligibility thresholds for individuals to be covered by Medicaid. Now, pregnancy is an automatic, you're covered by Medicaid, but there are obviously factors within that. And I think two good examples recently around Medicaid that we can kind of directly crosswalk. One, in states that have chosen not to expand Medicaid, we see a direct correlation to rural hospital closures.
Some state Medicaid programs have also expanded pregnancy coverage to the year following the child's birth.
We have seen good evidence that states that have decided to take up the option of a full year of Medicaid coverage postpartum, post-delivery, we're seeing much better rates of maternal outcomes. So fewer mortalities and morbidities postpartum. But again, the decision to expand Medicaid tends to be a pretty political one. And in a lot of our states where we tend to be more conservative, more fiscally conservative, believe less of a role for government and healthcare, that translates a lot of times into kind of more limited services for the rural populations living there.
Carrie Cochran McLean advocates for rural health initiatives in her role as the National Association's policy expert. But she says it's a challenge when the very state and federal officials she's trying to get on board about solutions are constantly changing.
My goal is when I'm working with, be it the administration or a member of Congress, is to figure out kind of what it is about rural healthcare that motivates them or is important to them. So, you know, the economic component of it is really important to a lot of folks, right? You got to have the hospitals, you got to be able to birth babies to keep the people, to have the economy, to have the communities you want. For others, and I would say, you know, this administration, it's talking about issues of kind of disparity and equity and making sure that we're caring for all of our populations and that there's not this disparity that we know there is in accessing these services in rural areas. One of the things that I love about rural health is that we work across both sides of the aisle. It is a bipartisan issue. I will go from talking to the most liberal committee chair in the Senate to the most conservative House member on Ways and Means about rural healthcare, and they both have a vested interest. They get the problem. Where we get to challenges is obviously around the politics of what the solutions are.
Cochran McLean says her team spends a lot of time sharing information on Capitol Hill about how rural healthcare works and the experiences of people in places like rural Mingo County, West Virginia.
And going back to basic level education, as new members of Congress come in, as people all of a sudden have a new focus on an issue, I think vaccines is an excellent example of that. And like throughout the country, we had no problem with vaccination rates for things like influenza and a lot of the childhood vaccines. And then all of a sudden, due to some of the, you know, what happened with COVID and the concerns there and the political engagement with that conversation, it's gotten a lot harder to get folks across the board, but especially folks in rural areas, to vaccinate. And so it's a lot of education. It's where we can kind of playing offense to figure out as an issue or a new kind of method of providing care or a new method of paying for care is being developed. We're thinking about how we bring rural into that conversation.
Cochran McLean focuses on the minute details of improving healthcare, what rules should change, where to allocate money, and which programs could help increase staffing or capacity in rural America. But none of that can happen without a much more basic understanding, explaining why places like Williamson should be allowed to continue their story.
One of the things that I always do when I'm starting out, kind of, I do a lot of public speaking to folks, and I talk about why should you care about rural communities? Why should, you know, I live, unfortunately, right now, I live in Washington, D.C. It's a lovely place to live, but it's not Montana. I'm going to get back there someday. But, you know, I have a lot of friends who have very rarely been in rural communities. And, you know, why should we care about this? Why should we invest in this? And there is an essential symbiotic relationship between rural and urban communities. Rural areas are where this country gets their, I call it the four Fs, fuel, fiber, food. And being from Montana, I say fun because it's recreation, right? Like where you're out doing, you know, kind of your outdoors and your national parks and all of the things. Without those resources, this country would be in a world of hurt. And yet, I personally think because of some of the political divides that we've ended up in, this place we've ended up in our country, it's really hard for people to see past that and to figure out how to find then common solutions that work for our rural communities. It just shouldn't be happening in this country. In the place that we live, with the resources we live, we should be able to find solutions to this.
All of that reminds me of my chat with Amy Staton. She's the medical assistant at the Williamson Health and Wellness Center in rural Mingo County, West Virginia, who's about to become a mother of a second set of twins. She's due in a couple of months and will likely drive more than an hour to give birth. If something happens, she and her husband Jacob will hope for the best. But they'd risk it all over again to raise their kids in Williamson.
My kids are sports fanatics. We are from one sport to the next, to the next, to the next. So when my kids can walk in to a place, Walmart, or even just the neighbor's house, and they'll say, hey, how are you? Or do you guys want to come over and play? I can't tell you how many times I've had people, little kids, knock on my door wanting my kids to come outside and play in the yard. It's amazing at the community that I live in.
But Staten knows her hometown is in trouble if it can't provide health care for families putting down roots. She worries about Williamson becoming a ghost town. And alongside all the major issues facing rural communities, she says the state of pregnancy care doesn't get enough attention from leaders.
I mean, it really doesn't come up because, you know, everybody's like, oh, she's having a baby, congratulations, you know. But they don't see what the things that these mothers need to go through that. I don't hear about how we're going to protect these moms and keep these moms here. How can we make this easier on them? Because you don't hear that. It's almost like it's, I don't want to say brushed under the rug, but kind of forgot about. Give us the comfort of saying, I know that I will be okay if something needs to happen.
We might be a small community and we might be tiny, but we do care and we do matter. Don't forget about us.
In America, we often romanticize rural life, where, yes, small towns form close bonds, life is simple, and nights are quiet. But that's just not the full picture. Rural America is fighting for survival right now. The way things are now, more and more rural hospitals can't afford to bring new lives into the world, or even care for those already there. What does that say about our willingness to protect their future? As I catch myself saying their future, I realize that's where the divide is here. Do we all care whether small town America continues? For me, that's a hard reality to consider. My family's story started in a small town. Those beginnings make me who I am. And this trend, it can't change without serious action from our leaders and policymakers. And I just hope they're listening. You've been listening to Us and Them. Our team for this episode was me, Trey Kay, Christina Stella, and Kate Smith. Michael Lipton, Tristram Lozow, and Ahmed Solomon wrote and performed the Us and Them show music. Mark Lerner designed our logo. The marvelous people at PRX and West Virginia Public Broadcasting make Us and Them possible. So do grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the West Virginia Humanities Council, and the CRC Foundation. We'd love to hear your thoughts about this episode. Share them with us on our Facebook page or on Twitter at Us Them Podcast. Us and Them was originally developed with assistance from the mentorship program at AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio. We'll see you next time on Us and Them.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.